Welcome to the ESG Matters podcast. My name is Ahmad Gomis and I am your host. Today we have Matt Wallace, who is the Chief Technology Officer at Faction. Faction is a pioneer of multi-cloud data services. Their patented networking fabric presents a single data set at public and private clouds at once, delivering the agility, scale, security, and data sovereignty of a data-first cloud architecture. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you so much. I just did a quick explanation of what Faction does, but I was wondering if you could go a little bit more in depth on that and how that can impact the ESG strategy of companies.
Sure. I think it maybe makes sense to just explain a little more. I always feel like I have to say this twice because it's such an unusual capability that we've developed that I think people need a little bit more of a mental model for what happens. But obviously, companies today often find themselves with multi-cloud environments. And sometimes it's by design. Sometimes it's through things like mergers and acquisitions. Sometimes it's accidents. But one way or the other, they find they have applications or workloads running across more than one public cloud, sometimes every public cloud. And a lot of cases, those applications really want access to the same data. Faction really comes to the rescue there, enabling that, whether it's accidental or strategic, through that multi-cloud presentation. And what you can imagine is the services and instances across every cloud being able to tap into the same object storage, mount the same volume, and there's no data movement. We actually have done such a tight job doing this network fabric presentation of the data into the cloud services that all of them get to treat it like it's local, even though it's the same copy. We're hosting that data in our cloud adjacent data centers. So there's a couple interesting ways that that ends up impacting ESG. And right away, one of those things is the governance aspect. One of the things that people are really affected by nowadays is this ability or the challenge of really dealing with personally identifiable information, PII, PHI, governance around things like how long are we allowed to retain data, who are we sharing it with, and questions like that. Now, if you think about the problem I was describing with multiple clouds, the alternative to Faction ends up being multiple copies of data. Once you have multiple copies in multiple places, you end up with multiple governance schemes. Not every cloud has the same mechanism for tagging, for indexing those tags, for controlling access with identity and authentication schemes, etc. And so the more diversity you have in those environments, the more is different across clouds, the more difficult it becomes to exercise any sort of governance regime. And we're talking about things like, how do I control access? How do I tag the data so I know where it came from, how long I'm allowed to keep it, or in some cases, how long I must keep it? All sorts of questions like that. And there's also some other really interesting things that tie into this. Obviously, we talk to a lot of people who are working really hard understanding what their emissions are, for example, like you think scope 1, scope 2, scope 3, tons of conversations around this, how to implement that, and so on. Data, obviously, is at the very heart of that discussion, right? Understanding what all those piece parts are. And collaboration becomes important because as you grow from scope 1 towards the much more comprehensive scope 3, you have to have a much more complete understanding of where emissions happen all along your supply chain. Once again, that's a real opportunity for data to help. But if you can't effectively share data, and in some cases, we're talking about proprietary data, then you really can't implement that kind of governance regime. And so once again, you have this thing where with a service like ours, where you can share across clouds a little bit more fluidly, you can actually extend this sort of network fabric right to your partner's cloud environment so that they can consume the data directly in an isolated and secure fashion. So that's a couple ways, just kind of off the cuff, that we can really help with some of those ESG challenges.
Well, that's really helpful, and thank you for that explanation. I want to dig a little bit more deeply when you're talking about leveraging data using Scope 3 as an example. Companies, as you know, are generating more and more data. To your point, some of that is proprietary. Some of it is really sort of based in sort of the value chain. And I'm wondering, how can companies structure their data in a way that they can leverage it to make better informed investment decisions and better business decisions generally? Is there a way that almost like a best practice that you're seeing or something that you would recommend companies do when leveraging a tool like Faction?
Yeah, I mean, aside from Faction, I do definitely have a lot of conversations with folks about data governance practices or just data management practices. It might even be more accurate to say. I think one of the challenge right there that you see really broadly in the industry is that there's not necessarily a single best way of doing things around data management, meaning a lot of teams, business units, applications are just kind of left to collect their data, and they'll do whatever they want from a format perspective. Where does it get stored? What does it get stored on? How long is it retained? And what are you paying for that? Those are all things that often get decided only in the application context, only in the BU context. And that ends up being a mistake because that creates this sprawl. If everybody chooses to do it differently, it's a little bit like the data version of technical debt. You know, when people are writing code, you want them to not repeat the same code because then it's multiple copies of code that has to be patched or fixed, etc. Same thing applies to data. You really don't want to create data debt, essentially, or data governance debt by having many copies, having them strewn about. And when I say copy, it's important to realize that most of those copies are human-driven. I'm not really talking about programmatic backup copies, right? If you're backing up some set of data and you've got a retention period, at the end of that retention period, it goes away. Okay, that's one thing. But when we're talking about individual teams that kind of go to another team and go, hey, we really need access to this data. They, you know, sort of get some credentials, but they know they want to do something with it, some sort of ETL process or transformation. So they make a copy. Now there's a second copy. But what happens if somebody comes along and says, we have to do this thing with the original copy? We have to mask off this field for privacy, or we need to remove all the rows that came from this project, things of that nature. Well, if there's this sort of questionable lineage where you don't know what other copies of data came from that first copy, you suddenly have a really big problem because you can't trace down where that data has propagated. So you can't really do what you're trying to do. You'll have a primary copy that's been changed, but you'll have a bunch of derivative copies and they will be different. And so I think the first big best practices really are around unifying a data practice, right? Actually, in the same way that I think cloud architects and cloud centers of excellence inside of enterprises have been a bit of a bellwether for good cloud adoption because they drive best practices and not just sort of willy-nilly adoption. I think this is a case where in the same way you need a data practice and you need to have best practices about where things are stored and how long. And then really importantly, how are we going to label this data, right? What is our catalog? You know, you see people using commercial products, whether it's, you know, a cloud native service like an AWS Glue with its catalog, or something like a Hive from the classic Hadoop stack, or something like a Starburst, which is a sort of more modern version. All of these things are using something like a Databricks Unity catalog even. There's not really one right answer. The key here is to be able to have an answer for that question. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be, obviously, a single catalog or a single way of doing things. But what you don't want is every team and every data set being essentially arbitrary. So you narrow that down. Now, of course, the reason I see this is because, you know, when you see these kind of data sets strewn across on-prem and then multiple clouds, you know, often would be one answer ends up being four answers because there's a different answer for each cloud. There's a different answer for on-prem. Some of the magic of what we do really is by unifying those data sets, we create a situation where folks are able to kind of unify that governance on the backside. So it makes that choice a little bit easier. You don't need two or three catalog solutions or metadata solutions, et cetera. And depending on the industry, of course, you might need more than that, right? Some folks are storing a lot of PII and, you know, they're doing business in Europe and they have to contend with, say, you know, right to be deleted requests, or you know, they might be subject to some regimes even in the United States if they're a U.S. company where they have to be able to produce all the data associated with the user, right? And so that creates another problem for them, which is like, how do I trace the lineage of all this data so that when someone says, what's the data you've got about me, that you can really produce that and either delete it or at least show it to them, you know, both of which are sometimes requirements.
Well, yeah, I think that really resonates with me because to your point about having multiple data sets that are derived from one primary source. I see that all the time. And trying to wrangle that when you're trying to make ESG decisions or even trying to collect data, you often are coming up with who owns this data? When was the last time this was updated? Is this the best copy? And that really deters a lot of activity that can occur to really get to the heart of how do you interpret this information to make better decisions. So I definitely understand that. And I think a lot of other people would, that would resonate with them as well. So have you seen companies leverage sort of this data that they're creating or data that they have to manage in one way, shape, or form to identify ESG risk and opportunities better than other companies? Are there some that you're, maybe because of how it's structured, they're poised to make better decisions on how they can mitigate their risk and take advantage of opportunities?
I think so. And I think I'm kind of reminded of a large bank I was working with, and I was always impressed because they seem to have the most concrete practice around their enterprise architecture, you know, their tool selection, et cetera. And they were still wrestling to a certain extent with data management, but they had the heart in the right place scenario, right? Every project they began, you know, they had things going along around cataloging, around identity that were very stringent, lots and lots of detail. And a lot of the projects that I saw were related to AI, you know, and even then they were doing a lot to kind of ensure that there was ethical treatment so that models that were developed to deal with customer data were ethical and didn't, say, propagate biases into the model. So the interesting thing is when it came to governance, it was really clear that they were doing their best job to make sure that all these practices were ticked and tied, right? So that every pattern there was for storing data and accessing data, there was some way to kind of trace that back to some governance pillar. Even then, as much as they were doing all the things that they could, there are some challenges that they found around authentication, around identity, around governance and cataloging. And part of that really is just environmental diversity. If you have a data science team that's using, you know, 10 different cloud services across three clouds, and each one of those cloud services accesses data in a different way or stores it in a different way, and you've got copies of data in each of those clouds, you have a pretty diverse problem. You have a lot of complexity to deal with. And so we really weren't there explicitly to assist with those governance aspects. So the ESG thing was something that I saw only because it was so central to everything they were doing. We were really trying to streamline what they were doing with data, right? Enable collaboration, make it easier for teams to kind of be innovative with that data. But it's funny how the same sorts of things, if you want to enable innovation, really enable it because you've got the processes in place, but you also have the infrastructure like a Faction and the multi-cloud data service to enable all that collaboration and access to those innovative services. If you can unify and simplify it, that also helps a ton with all of those ESG challenges. So I think that's what I saw in that case. And I see really similar problems across enterprises. Of course, every vertical industry has its own challenges, right? We do a ton of work with folks in the healthcare space and the life sciences space. They have an extra burden, right? Dealing with things like research data and understanding things like what population or cohort was this, or things like, you know, there's a lot of partnership with things like universities, understanding what was the partner that helped us get this data, all kinds of things like that. But definitely those other factors around effectively collaborating, you know, being able to understand where data lives, how to access it, and really unifying that practice, right? Because it doesn't come naturally. And I think maybe if there's a key here, it's you can't just go buy something off the shelf. It doesn't matter if it's software or it's Faction's multi-cloud data service or what. There's certainly no magic wand that makes it trivial. You still have to have some leadership in your organization that helps drive an understanding of why these practices matter and driving the implementation and adherence to those practices. But of course, you know, in the seat that I'm in, we've been privileged to help a lot of people at least simplify the scope of the problem.
One thing you brought up that I want to talk a little bit about is AI. So talked a little bit about AI and how the bank example that you gave is really trying to take a lot of one of the things that people are really struggling with, which is a bias in the development of AI. So I'm curious from your example, from that example or other examples that you may have had in the past, are you seeing companies really start to think about AI in a sustainable way, like thinking about the governance of it, thinking about how they can utilize it without sort of disrupting their overall business model? Or are people more nascent? Are companies more nascent in how their use of it? Is it fairly immature and you think that that's going to improve over time? And I'm just curious about your experience with AI and as it pertains to sustainability and how people are either leveraging it to solve ESG issues or looking at it from a lens of governance or the social impacts or the environmental impacts of it.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't seen a lot of ESG applied to the sustainability environmental efforts of individual enterprises, which isn't to say that it's not happening, right? My purview doesn't always, you know, give me the vantage point to see everything that's going on. I will say, independent of what individual companies do, AI is driving some incredible, just revolutionary things, right? There's a fantastic report called the State of AI report that a couple of investors came out with that reviewed some of the big tentpole innovations from 2022, right? And this, honestly, the report actually predates the current sort of wave of AI frenzy that came along with the ChatGPT launch, right? So even prior to that, and if you look at it, a good example of this is there is a type of plastic, PET, that represents something like 10% of solid waste worldwide. It's an extraordinary amount, right? Millions and millions of tons. And if you don't know much about plastic recycling, the way they recycle that plastic is basically to kind of crush it and roll it down into these little plastic beads. And that's because the plastic, once it's formed, it's very difficult to depolymerize that polymer, right? It comes from petroleum products, but once it's formed into a solid shape, it's very difficult. And so the version of recycling there is really to take it and just kind of crush it down into little bits. And then those bits can become part of the solid matter of a new item. But it's not really fully recycled, right? It's not, quote unquote, good as new. And so it's limited in what it can do. Now, there's always been an enzyme that could dissolve that, right? It could depolymerize the PET plastic. But it just really wasn't practical to use because it required like a very controlled environment, hundreds of degrees of temperature, right? So it was almost like you had to run a kiln or a cauldron. It was dangerous. And of course, you know, because of that amount of heat, the amount that you're going to be able to process bringing stuff up to that temperature is very, very limited. And it just generally didn't happen. So what people did last year is they started using ML techniques to try to use machine learning to design a better version of that enzyme. And this team came out with an enzyme. They call it FAST. The enzyme is called PTase, A-S-E at the end. And they came out with a FAST PTase, and it actually operates completely at room temperature. And so now there's this enzyme that they can use to actually truly depolymerize this plastic that's 10% of solid waste. So I know there's a little bit aside from like individual enterprise efforts around this, but I think it highlights something about how machine learning and AI today is driving some absolutely like science fiction level incredible outcomes. Taking technology that was literally impractical and being able to use machine learning processes to improve something to the point where it's not only practical, but it's literally revolutionary. And that's happening in all kinds of areas. Like, I mean, recycling is one. But of course, you dig in on AI and you find that there's contributions towards things as esoteric as like cold fusion, for example. Now, I will say, of course, like the classic version of AI, which was the sort of let's take in a data set and let's try to understand what the drivers are and make some predictions, right? So doing linear regression to say, all right, we know that this is the way that this normally goes. Now let's say if we have this data, can we predict some other factor, right? That type of AI, which is not at all new. It's not even, it's not tied to generative AI. Absolutely 100%. It's being used a ton, specifically in banks. And it's fantastic for all kinds of things, like predicting credit risk is a classic application of that, being able to understand how to better serve customers. I talked to one large enterprise that's in the logistics and transportation space, and they had a very odd thing going on where they had some internal systems problems that were causing some of their accounts to not be renewed. And so every, so often they'd have customers who should have been renewed on a contract. And so they kind of shifted back to undiscounted like general rates. And of course, customers would get a huge bill. They'd be really frustrated. They would end up with an account team and they'd, renegotiate that kind of renewal and they'd end up getting that, that discount off their bill. But it was a frustrating experience and it really dropped the ball for everyone and took a lot of extra time. Just by applying some really simple AI, they were able to spot all those events much more in advance and kind of augment their classic IT system. So you see that kind of like basic AI happening everywhere. But of course, the important part around the bank, and this is where I was really impressed and where I think people need to pay attention. And, this is a really big social problem or has the potential to become a really big social problem, which is when you train AI models, you are feeding a bunch of kind of existing data in. And so imagine, for example, that you were, you know, trying to predict something about defaults. And let's just say you had some sort of analysis that was trying to predict if we loan this money, could be a mortgage, could be personal, could be auto, whatever. And we want to kind of understand what the likelihood is that somebody defaults on this loan. If there's a bias that's baked into your data set, because, for example, you have historically given higher rates to a certain group, right? Whatever it is, whether it's a income group or whether it's a racial group, any of those sorts of things, any of those places where you can find bias potentially, it's very easy to propagate that bias in the data set. You know, the model is going to say, well, in the past, these people defaulted more. Well, if they defaulted more because you gave them a higher interest rate, not because of credit worthiness, but because of some factor that really never should have been included in the data set, now you've actually sort of embedded the bias into the model. And not only that, you have the potential for, before, if you'd looked at the data set, you might have been able to say, oh, look at why they made this decision about this higher interest rate. Now you've got a model. The model goes, well, our model's predicting this, right? Now, everyone who's involved in this really knows that's not an excuse and shouldn't be an excuse, but it actually takes effort to drive a practice, not because people are malicious, but because those biases end up being embedded in the reality of the world that we live in, right? They're embedded in that data set. And if you just naively embed them into a model to make predictions, you actually have the chance to kind of carry that forward. And if there's not accountability in the model, if you can't say, why did it make this prediction, then you can be in a scenario where you're sort of kind of creating even a bigger problem, basically, and pulling it forward. So I think there's a ton of that going on. You know, and a lot of this is really peripheral to what we do. But on the other hand, I do think absolutely that if you have, say, a governance team or an ethics team, you know, providing much more fluid access to a data set between that team and a data science team or a set of data science teams is a fantastic way to help get everybody on the same page working with that data. Right? If the data is sprawled around, they're working off their own copies. Like, can you imagine if you had a data governance team that actually said, you know what, we understand that this bias exists, and so we're going to do this other thing so that when we do credit analysis, we're going to change some of these factors. We're going to screen off some of these columns so that this pattern can't emerge in the data, right? Because we understand if we pull this data out, it actually lowers the accuracy of the model a tiny bit, but maybe it makes it much more fair. And so they might do that. But then what happens if everybody doesn't have access to that same data? What if they go back to the data set that hasn't been modified? And so that's the kind of thing where I think there's some potential through that kind of enhanced collaboration for us to really impact, right? And that's just good for the world.
Definitely. And I think that's some really great insight that people who are both looking to leverage AI and machine learning can take and start to think about more critically, because, you know, embedding bias is such an important thing that we have to understand. We have to make sure that that's not what we're doing when we're creating these systems, because part of the rationale, I think, for creating a lot of these systems is to take some of that bias that humans have against whatever population and really try to make it more an egalitarian sort of view. But I think that's something that we are definitely struggling with. My last question is, we talked a great deal about data management, governance of data. And I'm curious, if someone wanted to reach out to Faction and to learn more about your services, what's the best way that they can do that?
Well, you know, there's probably a bunch of ways. I think www.factioninc, so FactionInc.com is our website, and people can obviously show up there. And we've got a whole bunch of information about the services, the products, case studies, things of that nature. Very active, obviously, though, and we have a whole team that's active on social media. I always love to hear from people, right? Folks who come in and listen to this podcast. It's like, you can absolutely go to the website and submit a form. But I enjoy doing things like this, so it's always neat. Somebody reaches out on LinkedIn and goes, hey, I caught your podcast over there about talking about ESG. You've got this problem, right? It's always fun to engage that way. We're not so big that's like a insane burden to handle those. So of course, reach out personally. I'd love to hear from people who hear this, if there's something that resonates And, you know, we're also doing things to kind of educate the market around some of these data practices. We've got a whole collection of, you know, webinars and white papers. Yeah, and some of them are more just general data practice things, but we also do a lot of practical stuff, like how can you use a multi-cloud data service to integrate Snowflake, to integrate Databricks, right? These other tools that people really look to kind of help solve some of their data problems. So you can certainly start kind of getting educated and understand how, you know, Faction services fit in with some of those other software and SaaS services that people are leveraging. And then you can visit the website, reach out to me personally. Be great to hear from folks.
Well, thank you, Matt. Thank you so much for being a guest on the ESG Matters podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.